Welcome to Built, Wired, and Secured, the podcast where we explore how modern buildings are designed, connected, and protected in the real world. I'm Alex Morgan, and in today's episode titled Buying for the Exit, Avoiding Vendor Lock-In, we're diving into why procurement decisions today can create long-term constraints tomorrow, where organizations often get locked into proprietary ecosystems, and what decision makers should consider upfront to preserve flexibility down the road. Joining me today is Michael, and together we'll break this down from a practical, real-world perspective.
Click, the export button lights up, and nothing happens. A small alarm tone, almost apologetic, ticks in the background. You try again, same locked response. You can hear the frustration in the room. Reports are needed, tenants are asking, and the vendor says, "We'll have to build that for you." Months, budget, downtime.
Today, buying building technology so it doesn't trap you later. We'll lay out the procurement signals that matter, audio-friendly acceptance tests you can run, staged migration plans, and a one-page vendor exit checklist you can download at builtwiredsecured.com/exit checklist. Quick note up front, this episode offers operational guidance, not legal advice. If you're drafting contract language, bring in counsel for the legal review. We'll give you contract-neutral phrasing you can propose, but not legal copy.
With me is Michael Harrington, senior property manager who lives in this world, running buildings, keeping tenants happy, and fixing what breaks when systems don't play well together. Michael, thanks for joining.
Thanks, Alex. Glad to be here. From an operational standpoint, these are conversations we wish we'd had earlier. When something's locked down, tenants feel this immediately, and then you feel it in every budget meeting after.
Let's start by setting the stakes. Michael, imagine the report-export scenario I opened with. Walk me through the real-world consequences you see when portability wasn't considered.
Sure. First question I ask, what breaks if this goes down? If a system holds building telemetry plus tenant billing flows, a locked export means you can't access your own historical data quickly. So you can't invoice accurately, you can't troubleshoot trends, and you generate extra work for engineering and support. That leads to tenant complaints, credit requests, emergency budgets for consultants. It's a cascade.
Good phrase, cascade. That's what procurement decisions create if portability isn't part of the criteria. Our first segment is procurement signals. We'll run a list of practical proposal questions you can ask to spot portability risk without naming a vendor or getting into legal drafting. Michael, what's the first flag you look for in a proposal?
I look at data ownership and handback language. If the proposal doesn't explicitly say how data is exported, in what format, and under what time frame, that's a red flag. Too many proposals say data exports available upon request. What does that mean? 2 weeks? CSV? A custom format that only the vendor can parse? From an operational standpoint, that's vague and risky.
So, question one at procurement. What export formats are supported, and how quickly can we get a full data snapshot? Make vendors describe CSV, JSON, or documented schema exports, and timelines. What's another signal?
APIs, or the lack of accessible APIs. If the architecture depends on a single local control path, or an API is labeled coming soon, or partner only, with no documentation, that's a portability risk. Ask for a sample API endpoint that returns a device list, or a sample response. If they can't provide that in the proposal phase, be skeptical.
Okay. Ask for a documented API endpoint sample. Note how actionable that is. It's not, tell me all your secrets. It's, give me a small sample we can test. Next signal?
On-prem options and service boundaries. If the offering is cloud-only, but your building needs local survivability, ask for offline modes and handover processes. Also, watch for single-provider ecosystems, where firmware, integrations, and analytics all require that vendor's tooling. That's fine until it fails, and when it does, replacement costs skyrockets.
That's another good phrase you use. That's fine until it fails. The procurement signal there is an explicit description of what stays local, what requires the vendor cloud, and how operations continue if connectivity to that cloud is interrupted. Ask for a runbook or a high-level contingency flow in the proposal.
Exactly. And one more practical check. Ask vendors to identify their service boundaries. what they provide, and what they expect you to maintain. Vague handoffs mean assumptions will be made later, often at your expense.
Great. To summarize segment one, ask about export formats and timelines, request a sample API endpoint, clarify on-prem versus cloud behaviors and contingency modes, and require clearly documented service boundaries. All actionable, procurement-friendly questions, no vendor bashing, just facts.
Segment two, acceptance tests and staged migration. We promised audio-friendly, repeatable tests, things you can ask a vendor to demonstrate during acceptance and after handover. Michael, what tests have actually saved you time in the field?
Simple ones. Export a 30-day snapshot to CSV or JSON during acceptance. Then import that snapshot into an open-source viewer or even a spreadsheet, and confirm the key fields match what you expect: device IDs, timestamps, event types. If the vendor's export requires their proprietary viewer to be meaningful, that's a portability problem.
So, test A. Export/import a 30-day snapshot into an independent tool. Test B.
Verify a documented API endpoint returns a device list and schema. Ask for a live call during acceptance. Paste the endpoint into a simple API client or curl and show the JSON response. Confirm device identifiers and metadata are present and stable. If the only way to get that info is through an admin GUI, it's brittle.
Make that part of the acceptance script. We run endpoint X, we should see keys A, B, C. If not, we fail the test. Test C.
Require a documented data handback format in the proposal. Not legal language, a technical appendix that spells out fields, units, time zones, and any transformation rules. Then, during acceptance, the vendor produces the handback and you validate field-level consistency.
And a practical staged migration plan. Snapshot. Validate, archive, then switch. Don't pull the plug and hope. Michael, walk us through a simple staged rollback workflow you trust.
Start with a baseline snapshot. Export your current data and store it in an immutable archive with version info. Next, run the new system in parallel for a period. Watch for schema drift, timestamp mismatches, and device ID changes. If a mismatch appears, you have your snapshot to roll back to and a clear path to reconcile. Budget for that parallel window. It's cheaper than emergency rip and replace later.
Listeners, an acceptance test checklist could look like this. Export 30 days to CSV/JSON. Verify import into a neutral viewer. Call a sample API endpoint and validate schema. Require a documented handback appendix. Perform a parallel run and confirm reconciliation. We'll include a one-page checklist in the download.
One more operational test I use. Simulate the loss of vendor connectivity. Ask the vendor to show how systems behave when the cloud is unreachable for an hour, a day, what data is buffered locally, what user functionality continues, and how you recover the buffered data. If they can't simulate this during acceptance, assume there's hidden risk.
That's an excellent live test. Simulate failure, watch recovery. Segment three moves to ownership and lifecycle, documentation standards, versioned handovers, and budgeting for optionality. Michael, how do you make sure the day-to-day team can own the system after go live?
Documentation that is versioned and searchable. Not a single big PDF, but a living repo. Configuration exports, API examples, runbooks for common tasks, a list of who owns what. Also, demand a knowledge transfer session with recordings. If training is an optional add-on at extra cost, factor that into the decision.
And maintenance boundaries? How do you avoid finger-pointing when something needs to be fixed in the field?
Define clear SLAs and escalation paths for interfaces. The contract-neutral approach is to map responsibility by function. Vendor owns firmware updates for device class X. Owner is responsible for patching the local gateway. The integration point is the documented API between them. If that's clear, troubleshooting is faster.
Budgeting for optionality. That sounds expensive. How do you avoid overpaying for flexibility you might never use?
Make optionality modular and time-boxed. rather than buying a perpetual premium portability package, require deliverables at milestone gates, the export capability, API samples, and a documented handback are acceptance deliverables. If later you need deeper portability work, you procure it then. That way, you buy the exit routes up front without overspending on features you won't use.
Now, let's give listeners a couple of anonymized examples. No vendor names, no confidential details, just lessons. Michael, can you share a success story where flexibility saved time?
Sure. We had a lighting controls rollout where the vendor provided CSV exports and a public API from day one. 6 months later, we switched analytics vendors. Because we'd exported consistent device IDs and timestamps, the migration was a few days of mapping. No emergency budget, no downtime for tenants. That saved weeks and thousands in consultancy fees.
Contrast that with a harder case.
In another building, a proprietary access control system used unique identifiers that only the vendor understood. When the vendor announced end of life for a component, we needed that data for migration. The export was possible, but the format was unreadable without vendor tooling, and the vendor charged for every export. That project became a rushed forensic effort and lots of rework. Lesson: readable exports and documented schemas pay off.
Those real outcomes map directly to the signals and tests we discussed. Before we wrap, Michael, the procurement practitioner I checked with provided a short non-legal acceptance criteria phrase listeners can read into RFPs. Can I read that and have you react?
Acceptance criterion. Vendor must provide a documented data handback specification and a reproducible export of 30 days of production data in JSON or CSV within 5 business days of request. A sample API endpoint that returns device identifiers and metadata must be available during acceptance. Vendor must demonstrate offline mode behavior under simulated cloud loss. Michael, reaction?
That's clean and actionable. It avoids legal wording and focuses on demonstrable deliverables. From an operational standpoint, if a vendor meets that during acceptance, you've removed a lot of the worst-case surprises.
Okay, let's close with 3 immediate actions you can run before signing anything. 1. Add the export and API acceptance tests to your RFP or purchase order and demand a live demo. 2. Require a documented handback appendix as an acceptance deliverable. 3. Budget and schedule a parallel run and a failover simulation during commissioning.
And a final reminder, ask the question, what breaks if this goes down? Early and often. It keeps the conversation grounded in tenant impact and business continuity, not just feature checklists.
That wraps up today's episode of Built, Wired, and Secured. We explored how planning for the full life cycle of a system, including the eventual exit, can help avoid vendor lock-in and preserve flexibility for the future, and hopefully gave you a clearer way to think about how these decisions play out beyond the initial install. If you'd like to explore more episodes and resources from the show, visit www.builtwiredsecured.com. Until next time, make sure the systems you're responsible for are built to last, wired with intention, and secured for the real world.